Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
In this audiocast number 40, teenagers get a chance to ask me anything they want. Pretty interesting. So just sit back and...
1, 2, 3!
Listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a very special episode because it is going to be very different from what you're used to. Instead of me asking all the questions, a bunch of high school students get to ask me questions. You see, I was invited to a co-ed high school in the New England area, and I was one of their speakers, and they also had breakout sessions. And so I had a chance to do two types of breakout sessions. The first was for freshmen and sophomore, and then the second for juniors and seniors, and they get a chance to ask me whatever they wanted. And I had the responsibility to try to, number one, take their questions seriously, but also seriously answer their questions. And so in this appetizer, in this amuse-bouche, I hope you enjoy this deep dish discussion. And to be honest with you, I wish I would have had a priest who was willing to listen to me and answer my questions when I was in high school. And it was only until college that I met one of them, and so I'm hoping that these kids and the answers that I gave to them would be helpful for them to grow into the young adults they are called to be. So in this appetizer amuse-bouche, I just invite you to enjoy this deep dish discussions as high school students get a chance to shoot the shiitake with me. I'll be back in just a minute. We hope you enjoy this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake, and if you want to be a part of our premium subscribers, people who receive free weekly extra content, all you've got to do is just visit shoottheshiitake.com. Your $10 or more each month helps us to promote our mission, which is to bring about conversions one conversation at a time. And if you want, and you've got a business and you want to promote it, you can also advertise with us to our very specific and very active listening group. To get involved as an advertiser or as a premium sponsor, just go to shoottheshiitake.com, and thank you for your support. And welcome to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion. And I am going to talk to young people because they've got questions and hopefully we have some answers. But more importantly, we can kind of work together to find solutions and answers to the questions and the problems that we all face. So I'm not going to say what school we're in. All I can say that I am celebrating with just a bunch of high school students at an awesome school. Just how awesome is your school? All right. And what we're going to do is we're going to actually have a chance to hear questions. I'm going to try to answer them. But then the rule is I get a chance to ask you a question as well. So don't tell me your name. Just go ahead and state your question.
Okay. So I'm really only doing this because my friends dared me. But
If Jesus is God's only son and we are all the children of God, what would that make all of the boys?
Okay, that's kind of like another math question here. So, or biology. Can you just ask that one more time? Because I was really trying to think about this.
So if Jesus is God's only son.
Jesus is God's only son, yeah.
And we are all the children of God.
And we are all the children of God.
What does that make all the boys of the world?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, we're talking about gender specificity. Okay, so what we're trying to say is that Jesus is God's only begotten son from God's self, God himself as the father, and Mary obviously the mother of Jesus biologically. So what does that make all the rest of the boys? That makes us, here's the answer, Jesus's brother by adoption and God's children by spiritual adoption. Follow-up question.
But God created Adam and Eve, correct?
Correct.
So that would make Adam his son.
You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. Adam actually came from the earth, didn't come from the substance of God himself. And so in theological language, in the Catholic Church, we actually have distinctions of what we're made of. We're made up of matter, and that's what Adam was. He was made up of the matter of the earth, and then God breathed into that earth the spirit, which gave Adam life. Jesus is different. Jesus's substance, his matter, came from God, and the substance himself also came from God. So Jesus is God and shows us the only reason why we can say that Jesus is the Son of God is because it's a way to describe what kind of children we are called to be, which is basically obedient. So here's my question to you. And that was there's like some serious theological questioning going on up in here. But let me just ask you this question. What is your favorite food and why?
Spaghetti, because it's boring.
Spaghetti because it's boring?
Yes.
Not the way I make it, all right? Let's give it up for her for that awesome question. Have a seat. And by the way, I know that there's a couple of you who's been like, wait a minute, that question made me want to ask another question. So I'll take another question back here if you want to line up behind. All right, don't tell me your name. Just go ahead and shoot your question.
Do you think priests should be married?
Oh, that is an awesome question. Do you think priests should get married? And so the answer is yes, but to who is the question? So for me, I actually believe in a way that I am married. I am in a committed relationship. I made a public vow to kind of, in a sense, espouse, to give my commitment to the church. And by doing that, it gives me a chance to not limit my time and my love and my energy to just one person or a small group of people like a family, but to everyone. But I think what you're really asking might be, I don't know, is should priests get married? You know, because we always talk about, oh my gosh, there's not enough priests in the world. And you know, we got to feel that they could just get married. And that might be true, but let me just throw out some statistics here, that there are actually other religions where their clergy can get married, and they actually have less priests than the Catholics do. Isn't that interesting? Like even the Greek Orthodox, who I love because they're actually part of the original church, their priests can get married. And I'm friends with a bishop in the Greek Orthodox Church, and he says, man, I really wish that we didn't have that rule, because what it does is it kind of divides the attention of who am I called to serve. Because see, a married man is called to serve his family and his children, while a priest, we can serve everyone and anyone. But the real question that might be asked is, why can't priests have sex? That might be a deep question. And she's like, I didn't ask that question. But it might be, and the reason why we don't is because, actually, you kind of can. It's just not appropriate, because as a priest, I gave up that gift because that gift wasn't for me, in order to receive another gift. And that gift is how to love people and not limit it to just a body part, so to speak. To love people with my heart, mind, and soul. And so we actually stand as a witness to how to love in a deeper way and not just in a physical way. So hopefully that answers maybe the underlying questions, but here's my question for you. Who is the person in your life that influenced you the most and why?
My mom.
And why?
Well, she was always there and she taught me how to respect myself and do everything.
That's awesome. Give it up for moms, and let's give it up for this awesome student. All right, we only have two more questions, but I will take one or two more. If you want to just get up here and line up right behind the gentleman in the back, come on up, come on up. And here's why. You ready for this? I want to give you the definition of boring. You ready for this? The definition of boring is answering a question that no one is asking. So if you're bored, it ain't my fault. It's your fault because you gotta be willing to ask questions. And so here's one from you, young man. Just put up the microphone to your face and go ahead and ask your question.
Do you think atheists who are good people and try and be helpful, do you think they get a chance to go to heaven?
Oh my gosh. You all are like a bunch of philosophers. I mean, I thought you would just be asking like, do you still break dance? I mean, nope, you guys are really going for the good stuff. The question being, do you think that atheists get a chance to go to heaven? So one thing I can say off the bat, going to heaven and hell, that's like way above my pay grade. You know, that is definitely a decision for God alone because God judges hearts. Maybe what I have to ask is, do you think that the atheist wants to go to heaven? Because if they've kind of militantly and maybe in an angry, not that all atheists are militant and angry, many of them may be because they think that we're kind of shoving religion down people's throat when in fact that might not be true. And if you do, stop, all right? But if you are one of these atheists who are like, I don't believe in God, and I think people who do believe in God are stupid, would they even want to get to heaven and realize, oh, nope, I was wrong? You know, like, nope, God is real. And boy, it really sucks to be in front of God's presence knowing that I've denied him the entire time. So the question that you're asking is not loaded in a negative way, but there's a lot to it. Does the atheist want to get to heaven? Because ultimately, heaven is the choice of the person. Now, does that mean that atheists can't get to heaven? Well, I just know that there have been cases of people who denied God their entire life. And then literally at the last moment of their life, in a solemn kind of quiet way, they've accepted God in their heart. They've accepted Jesus. And does that mean that that person doesn't get to heaven? That's not for me to decide, but I know that God is merciful and God wants even an atheist to get to heaven, but the atheist has to have the choice. The free choice to be there. So here's my question for you. What is the most loving thing you've ever done for someone you don't like? So hold on a second, just think about that. What's the most loving and kind thing you've done for someone you don't like? Can you think you can answer that question? He's still thinking, like I can smell the rubber burning in his brain. Yep, he's got something, here we go.
I still try to be kind to that person and be their friend even if I don't like them, so.
That is awesome. Still try to be kind to that person even if you don't like them. You are on your way to the kingdom of heaven. That is awesome. Let's give it up for this young man. All right, here we go. We've got about 10 minutes of questions here. And my question is, can you stand up real quick? How tall are you, for God's sakes? That is, he is 6'4". Oh my gosh. All right, have a seat because that's the only way that I'm gonna see you eye to eye. And by the way, I'm standing. So here is his question.
So when you said earlier in Mass that you didn't think that you would really become a priest, like how did God inspire you to actually take on the path of becoming a priest?
Yeah, that's true. That is an awesome question. So I really didn't want to become a priest because I just honestly thought priests were boring. I remember sitting in church one day and saying to my mom how I hated church so much. I actually said, Mom, I hate church so much. I literally want to kill myself. I told that to my mom and my mom looked at me and she was like, you picked the right place to do it. That's what she said. And I remember telling my dad, I'm like, I can't stand this priest. He's so freaking boring. I mean, he's driving me nuts. And I just looked at my dad, I said, I can't stand this. This is killing me. And my dad said, well, if you think you can do better, do it. And it was a real challenge for me to try to not just simply diss the Catholic Church or church for that matter. I don't care which one it is, but just a church, especially that's got a better track record than a bad track record. You know, like we always hear the negative things about the church. We don't hear about the good things that the church has done. So what made me want to get there? Well, here's what it was. My brother, when I was 18 years old and I was teaching full-time martial arts and I was a college student and ready to take my exams to try to go into, you know, to get into college and such, he actually paid for me to go on a trip in Europe where there's like miraculous things happen. I'll just tell you what it is. It's a place in Croatia called Medjugorje where the Blessed Mother, Jesus's mom, allegedly is appearing to like children and giving messages and miracles are happening. He paid for me to go and I actually was like, I don't really care about the church stuff, but dude, I'm going to Europe, you know? So I went and it changed my life. I saw how church was bigger than just my church that bored me for an hour on Sundays. I saw like cool young people coming to church and I saw people taking their faith seriously. And that kind of touched my heart and my life to the point where I wanted to keep that peace with me. So I went to church every day. Can you believe that? I started to go to church, even just to pop in to say, all right, I just want to say a prayer to kind of like be a good guy and to like be a better person. And that is what it was. It was a slow go of a, what I would call a conversion experience. So now that's how it all started. And eventually the opportunity to really discern priesthood came about, which is why I did it. Now here's my question for you. If you could be a patron saint of anything or anyone, what would you be a patron saint of?
I would say lost things because I always like lose something, but I would probably say talking to people, just being like sociable because that's kind of how I meet people. Like I like to do that.
That is awesome. Patron saint of conversation. Let's get up for this young man. Two more questions. Here we go. Just hold it up nice and close, talking to here, and then tell me what your question is.
Hello. So I saw you like on the stage and you were like very good at public speaking. So like, how did you become so good at public speaking?
Well, actually, that's awesome that you asked because I didn't grow up. I grew up in America, but I came originally from the Philippines. And my mom, you know, when I was a kid, I went to Catholic school. They would make me, you know, read the readings. Like you all had some readers today. And my mom would make me practice all the time and just kind of work on my enunciation and kind of do that. And I actually got involved when I was in high school in something called speech and debate called forensics. And that's how I got involved in it. And it was awesome. It taught me so much about confidence and public speaking. And if there's one thing that I'd recommend that everybody do is maybe put down the texting just a little bit more and try to engage in clear conversation so that we can practice that. And even better, talk to people you don't know. So I know that you've got a pretty big school. You might know a lot of people, but you don't know everyone. Try doing that. Now, here's my question for you. If you could choose your dream job for your future, what would it be and why?
I really like to dance, so like maybe like a choreographer or something.
Oh man, I love it. That's awesome. Let's give it up for future choreographer. And then the final question is coming from you. Microphone to your mouth. Here we go.
When you die, are you the same age in heaven? Because God forbid, like say my dad dies at 60 and then when I die, I'm 70. So like in heaven, am I older than him?
That's awesome. How did you guys get so philosophical? This is amazing. I thought you'd be like, what's your favorite band? No, I mean, you guys are asking serious questions. So let me tell you real quickly that there is a kind of a pious legend. It's not true, but they say there's a pious legend that when you die and experience, God willing, the resurrection of the dead, which is basically when your body and your soul are joined together perfectly in heaven, they say that you're going to have the body when you were 33 years old, because technically that was the age that Jesus died. And so that's the quote unquote perfect age. So kind of thinking about that, when I was 32, I did push-ups and sit-ups every day because I wanted to look good, right? So the idea of your body in heaven and what age you would be, technically, first of all, let me tell you this, no one knows because I just haven't been there. But I can also say it's not about age. It's about a state of life. We sometimes think of heaven as a place that's awesome, where you could just constantly get on the roller coaster, not have to wait in line kind of thing. But that's actually not what it is. It is a state of existence, like being at peace forever. And that could happen at any age. Have you ever experienced like a peacefulness in your soul that you was like, I would love to capture this moment? Like for example, and I'm just going to be very honest with you. When I had a girlfriend and I kind of like kissed her and hugged her and we kind of held each other, I was like, dude, this feels pretty awesome. I kind of like this. And I kind of don't want to move from this moment right here, right now. Eventually, I had to because I started to get like a, you know, a cramp in my arm kind of thing. So I'm like, all right, I got to move. But just that moment, of peace. Like, have you ever experienced walking down, say you celebrate Christmas and you're, no one is there and the Christmas lights are on and you just sit there and you experience peace? Or how about like at Thanksgiving when your parents are looking over at the family and be like, oh my gosh, this is such a peaceful moment right now. You see, that is not to be defined by age, but it is a state of existence. And so what I want you to do is not worry about the age part, but just think about what's going on inside. Do I have the peace in my soul no matter what age I am? Because regardless, it's not going to be about like a physical thing, but a state of life, a state of mental and spiritual well-being. And here's my question for you. If you could have dinner with anyone, like an awesome kind of dinner with anyone, who would it be and why?
I think it would be Cardi B.
Cardi B. All right. There it is. I don't know who that is, but I think she does like a little feature on... Oh, you got a question? Oh, man, just right off the bat, he just jumped up from the front row. Final question here, and bring it up to you.
How do you find time to be a breakdancer, a priest, and a chef in one day?
Well, I don't. Okay, that's an awesome question. But I am busy. As soon as I leave from here, I've got one day to pack because I leave for New Zealand, I leave for Australia, I leave for Singapore and the Philippines, and then I come back to America, and then it's like basically Thanksgiving. And it's a busy thing. And so here's my question, but really the answer. How do we manage our busy day? And what are the things that keep us busy? Maybe you should all check yourselves and ask yourself, what occupies my time and how do I organize my day? And that's what I do every day. I have to ask myself, what's the most important thing for me? And I kind of mentioned it, it's receiving the Eucharist. That's the most important thing. So sometimes I'm saying Mass at like 3 o'clock in the morning because I have a 5 o'clock flight. And so I make sure that my priorities are to be the best priest I can possibly be, to be as loving with people as I possibly can. And I have to also learn how to say no. That's how I do it. I just prioritize according to God's plan, not mine. And my final question for you is, and this is how we're going to end it here. Here it is. All right. If you were president of the United States of America, what would be the first law that you would sign into effect? Oh my gosh, he has to think about this. He's rubbing his chin. Oh, he is thinking about it. You got to do it in a minute because I got to get out of here. Think about it. What would be the first law that you would sign into effect? And the clock is ticking and you got only...
Do I have to answer this question?
You got to answer that question. Go ahead. It could be a simple one. Come on, you got 10 seconds. Here we go. Here we go. And...
Take away school.
He would get rid of school. He would get rid of school. But check this out. Check this out. He didn't say that he would stop learning. Oh, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the Shoot the Shiitake. Let's give it up for this awesome school on Faith Rally. We hope you're enjoying this special episode. And as these high school students have questions to ask, so I invite you to ask your questions and maybe I'll even answer them in one of our upcoming episodes. So all you've got to do is ask your question and feel free to ask me anything you want at either Father Leo, spelled out, at fatherleofeeds.com, or go to shootthesheitake.com and post your question there. And I look forward to shooting the shiitake with you. And welcome back to the Deep Dish Discussion. I am continuing my conversation with a bunch of high school students. This time it's juniors and seniors for an awesome school up here in the New England area. Let's hear your school spirit, everybody. And we've got contestant, or at least question number one. Hold the microphone up to your mouth and let's hit that question.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite TV chef?
Besides myself, who's my favorite TV chef? All right, well, I don't think of myself as a TV chef, even though I am on TV chefing every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Check your local listings. But basically, I have met a couple really popular chefs, And some of my favorite chefs are, there's a guy named Chef John Besh in New Orleans. He's just such a great guy, and he's experienced the ups and downs of life, and he's just amazing, dedicated dad and husband and just a philanthropic guy. But I also really, I got to admit this, I have to give props to Chef Bobby Flay, who I beat in season 7, episode 1 of The Throwdown with Bobby Flay. Available at fatherleofeeds.com/watch. But basically, Chef Bobby Flay gave me an opportunity to kind of showcase not just my cooking, but my message, because my message is all about the power of food and how it can literally bring people together. And so when he challenged me on The Throwdown, season 7, episode 1, you can watch it at fatherleofeeds.com/watch. But when he challenged me, he literally gave me a platform that I never would have had. On that day, in 1 half-hour show, which took about 2 days to film, 2 million unique visitors visited my website in 1 half-hour show. So that was a real popular guy giving me a platform to do something awesome. So let me ask you this question. Besides me and Bobby Flay and Chef John Besh, and I'm kidding, who's like your favorite chef and why?
I don't know if you consider him a chef, but Guy Fieri, because I love Divers, Drivers, and Dives. So,
dude, he is an awesome chef. Let's give it up for a Guy Fieri fan, ladies and gentlemen. All right, hold that microphone up to your mouth, and what is your question?
Hi, I was just wondering, what's like one piece of advice you have for us as young Catholics in school? What's the one piece of advice as a priest you have for us to grow closer to God?
Well, my gosh, can I tell you something? Even the other class, the freshman and sophomore, you all came up with some serious impacting questions. I mean, I thought you'd ask me to like, hey, can you like break dance? You know, I mean, so that's pretty, oh, now he's sitting down. So to answer your question, what is the one piece of advice that I could recommend for you to get closer to God? So very simple, get to know the real Jesus Christ. Just get to know the real Jesus Christ. There are even atheists, they can't deny that Jesus was real. He was a historical, factual person. So even if you're not fully a Christian or fully a Catholic, I guarantee you, if you get to know the real person of Jesus, read what people have written about him that are like obviously authentic and true, you are going to kind of want to be not only his best friend, you're going to want to take his words and you're going to make them real. You're going to incarnate his teachings. So that's the most important piece of advice, because it's all about Jesus. This world hears Jesus, people's eyes roll. I get it. I was the same way too, until I actually met people who love Jesus. And boy, they like knocked my socks off. I met Mother Teresa of Calcutta. I met St. John Paul II, and they just said, get to know Jesus. And he is not only real, he is alive, and he wants you to get to know him, because in doing so, you get to know yourself. And here's my question for you. Hold that microphone up. How do you stay close to God? What do you do to get closer to God?
I feel that getting closer to God, I like to serve other people, like the less fortunate and people who are in need, and bring them closer to God or bring a little bit of God into their lives. So that's how I continue to grow close to Jesus and stay close to Jesus.
That is awesome. Let's give it up for the servant here who... That is awesome. And you know, he just answered his question in a way. The way you get closer to God is by serving one another. Hold that microphone up to your mouth, young man, and let's hear your question.
You say you travel the world. What has been your favorite country to go to? And can you explain the experience there?
All right. Yeah, there's two countries that are my favorite, if you don't mind. I'm going to take one on one side of the lake and the other on the other lake. So Italy is my favorite country to visit in Europe, simply because that's where I also studied culinary arts. It's also where I developed this theology of food, kind of understanding the power of food. And that's also where I studied to become a priest. I lived at the Vatican for 6 years. And I totally love the way Italians eat, which is like 3-4 hours long. But the other country that I like to visit was one that I was kind of ashamed of. It's the one that I came from. I was actually born in the Philippines, and I came to America when I was only 1 year old. And I was kind of embarrassed growing up in America, where, you know, I just felt like, oh my God, everyone here is so tall and white. It's unbelievable. And I kind of felt out of place, to be honest with you. And so I kind of tried to deny my roots, that happens. You know, we sometimes are embarrassed of it. And why? Because the Philippines, it's not a wealthy country. It's just not. It's a poor country. And, you know, at one point it went through a lot of political turmoil. And so you can even be embarrassed of your roots. But then I was on the international stick fighting team for the Paralympics. It was a set of Olympic games that weren't part of the Olympic Committee yet. And so I was actually part of a stick fighting team. And we, like from America, we go over to the Philippines. And because we knew it was poor, we also collected some donations and candy and stuff like that. Well, we were giving it out to this little village. And again, I was still kind of embarrassed and trying to be like, no, I'm American, right? So I was kind of, again, ashamed. But then I saw this, we were at this village made up of huts. And these kids came out and they were all kind of nervous to meet us because we were dressed in our uniforms. And we look kind of awesome. I will admit that, all right? We all look kind of awesome. And we're handing out toys, trying to be generous. And there was this one little kid who shows up. All he had was like a t-shirt. He wasn't even wearing like shoes or slippers. And he was so poor. And I remember handing him candy and he didn't want to take it at first. He didn't want to take it. And I remember one of my teammates said, man, Leo, that little guy looks like you. And I looked at him, and it's not because we all look alike, all right? I mean, I'm not saying that. But he kind of looked like me. And I thought to myself, my God, how blessed am I to be in America? But then I looked at this kid, handed him this candy, and he honestly wouldn't take it. He honestly wouldn't take it until he ran, got his little brothers and sisters, brought them to me. He accepted it, and he just handed it to his brothers and sisters. And I just thought to myself, if that's what the Filipino people are like, generous and loving and all about family, I am proud to be a Filipino. And so the two countries that I love, Italy, where I got my spiritual upbringing, and the Philippines, where I grew up. Now, let me ask you this question. If you could be a citizen of any country in the world, where would it be and why?
I mean, I'd have to say the United States.
and why?
I don't know. I just love it, the whole traditions that we grow up with here.
I love it too, and that's why I'm proud to be an American. Let's give it up for this young man. Here is the only young lady who's asking these questions. I am shocked. Here we go. Hold the microphone up to you, and here we go. Next question is,
what would you say is the most rewarding thing that happens to you as a priest?
Oh my gosh. You people are like awesome. Really, that is an awesome question. What's the most rewarding thing that happens to me as a priest? And here's why. A lot of people think I've got a miserable life. I got an awesome life. I mean, my life is awesome. As a priest, I have a chance to meet people in good times and in bad to try to inspire them. That doesn't mean that I don't have a lot of challenges. There are a lot of people who don't like the priesthood. In fact, especially in the recent scandals, I was walking in an airport. I had my Roman collar on, and one person literally just walked up to me like, child abuser, child molester. And I'm like, what is that about? You know, and like literally, because I live in the hood in Baltimore, and I was just walking through my neighborhood and I had my Roman collar on, and there was this girl who like just threw junk on the floor and she littered. And I said, hey, pick that up. Littering, not cool. And she looked at me and she said, shut the F up, you effing chink priest. And I looked at her and said, girl, I'm Filipino, all right? So I was like, no, you don't do that to me. So I'm just telling you, I have tremendous challenges, not just within the church with the scandals and the struggles, but even there are people who really hate the church, and I can understand why they may be angry with it, but there's no need to hate it. But to answer your question, the greatest gift that I've had as a priest, I got to give you two of them, is one, absolving people of sins in the confessional. When people come to the confession, you'll be like, I hate confession. But if you do it right, you do it real, and you do it on your own, not just when you do it as a school, but you do it on your own, it is one of the most powerful experiences of just realizing who you are. And I have met some of the most amazing people in the confession. And the other thing, preparing people to die. Whoa, that is like I go to the hospital and I've anointed people who are literally on death's door, and if they're peaceful, because I hopefully bring some peace to them, they give me a sense of like, you know what? Everything we do in this life will be measured in the afterlife, be the measure for the after. So in other words, in the confessional and when I'm anointing people who are sick, it helps me to understand how to live this life on earth better. And here's my question for you. All right, you ready for this? What is your favorite hobby and why?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with playing sports. Maybe like soccer, lacrosse.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Our soccer and lacrosse player. That's an awesome question. Let's give it up for her. Here we go. Oh my gosh, more gentlemen coming up. All right, let's hold that microphone up to you here at this awesome high school. We're just engaging in conversations here on Shoot the Shiitake. And your next question is?
Do dogs go to heaven?
Do dogs go to heaven? And the answer to that question is, I have no idea. I do know, and don't freak out, because I am more of a dog person than a cat person. Just saying. No, don't be on the hating. I'm just saying that dogs are created by God, and that while they do have a soul, and this is what it's about, heaven is about a rational soul, and that is only for those made in God's image and likeness, which are quote-unquote humans, I will have to say that a dog maybe may not experience the resurrection, but hey, if a dog makes this world more heavenly by their obedience to their master, hopefully you hear where I'm going with this, then why couldn't they get to heaven? But I will say, the only reason to get to heaven is not because of your dog, but because of God who made the dog. And when you're in heaven, all of your desires and dreams and your wishes, that's where it will be fulfilled. And so if your wish would be like to have your dog to cuddle up with you and not poop on your carpet for all of eternity, then maybe that is a glimpse of heaven. And my question for you is, if you could become an animal, what would your animal spirit be? And your answer is?
That's a tough one. I'm really feeling a kangaroo.
All right. Feeling a kangaroo. Okay. I don't even know exactly where to begin with that, but I will be in Australia and I will see them and eat them. All right. So kangaroo is delicious, people. Don't you be judging. It is tasty. It is tasty. All right. Next question is,
do you ever wish that you could get married?
Yeah, that's that question that someone asked in the last group, and it is a good question. Actually, no. I don't want to get married, in part because, in a way, I already am. I'm committed in a relationship that takes up all of my energy and time. But maybe the question you might be asking is, do you miss sex? And he's like, dude, I didn't ask that question. But maybe that is the question. So I will answer it because a lot of people are almost afraid to ask it. Technically, no. Do I experience temptation? Do I miss wanting to be loved and held in someone's arms? There's going to be that reality all the time. But I'll tell you this, that doesn't mean I can't love people. I just don't love them in a sexual way. I love them in an intimate way that isn't always about sex. And so I love your question because it opens up a deeper understanding, because a lot of people think that marriage is the only way you're going to experience fulfillment and love. And that's not true. Marriage is not the only way you experience fulfillment and love. You experience it with service. You experience it in deep relationships. And more importantly, you experience it when you are willing to sacrifice for the other, which is what marriage is all about. And so here's my question for you. Do you believe, first of all, you're called to get married?
Yes.
Okay, so if you can describe the one character that you want your wife to have, and it's like, there is no question, she has to have this particular character, what would that be?
I'd like her to be smart.
Smart. All right, we'll take it up. I'm not exactly sure. Whoa. Wait. Don't you? Let's give it up for the smart lover here. Have a seat. Wait, I got to make just one comment about that. Let's make sure that when we kind of have that character of the kind of person we want to marry or the kind of person we want to be with, he said smart. And here's why. Because she would have to be smart to deal with someone like him on occasion, right? Because she would know that true love requires sometimes the smart people, you got to hear this too. Sometimes smart people realize they don't know everything. So I love his answer, because a truly smart person would be someone who would always be willing to continue to learn. That is an awesome characteristic. A smart person is always learning. And now, question from you, young man.
So you've gone from being a knife and stick fighter to a break dancer, to a chef, to a priest. Is there any other goal that you want to achieve like that?
Listen, I didn't ever want to be a breakdancer. It's just what I did because it was what cool kids did at the time, and I had rhythm. I didn't want to be a martial artist or a world champion for that matter, but I did it because it was a cool thing to do, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were awesome at the time as well when I was growing up. And also, I wanted to break people's faces. I mean, honestly, the honest truth, right? I wanted to be able to defend myself and be cool. I've never gotten into a fight, though, to answer that question. Is there a goal that I have? And I will tell you this. My greatest goal that I have, in all honesty, two of them. One, to be the best priest that I could possibly be. The second goal, and I'll be very honest with you, maybe you can even help me with this, just follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Father Leo Feeds. It's all spelled out. I was actually asked by some writers in New York if I would be willing to do a food show similar to what Anthony Bourdain did, you know, when he was traveling around the country and kind of meeting people where they're at. I've got a TV show already, but I would love to have a show like that where I'm just going out and meeting people and trying to build bridges through food. So here's my question for you. What would be the one thing that would give you ultimate fulfillment and peace in your life?
Just grow old with a loving wife and a nice family, honestly.
Oh my God, dude. That is awesome. I don't even know what to say about that. And the last question is, the last question comes from, don't tell us your name, just go ahead and just talk right into that microphone. Here we go.
You were on Bobby Flay's TV show. So if you could be on any other TV chef's show, what would you choose?
All right. So I would honestly love to host Master Chef on Bravo because the food that these chefs put out, it is pretty stinking amazing. It just looks beautiful, and they're taking things that I never would have done and kind of recreate it, which is why I love cooking. So I would love to host a competition like Bravo's Master Chef, Top Chef, that is. But here's my question for you. Here it is. Ready? If you could become food, I know that's kind of a weird thing, but Jesus became a piece of bread and a drop of wine, right? If you could become food, I would like to know what that is. What would you, like, if you could become any food, what would it be? And this is a weird question, but it's going to get into the psyche of why I do what I do and why. If you could become food, what would you become and why?
Well, that's a toughie. I'd probably say ranch, bottle ranch, because, listen, a nice salad, and you get a little bit of that ranch, that's a good salad.
All right, give it up for ranch dressing, man, here. Here is my closing thought. Here is my closing thought. I know that that was a weird question, but here's why I ask it. You know, my show, Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo, that's the name of the show that you're going to be on, it's really about becoming the answer to what this world is hungering for. What is this world hungering for? I'll tell you. It's hungering for peace. It's hungering for, like, harmony and, how shall I say, an ability to get along. I mean, our world is messed up because we're not doing exactly what we're doing now. We're not talking with each other. And you could have asked me anything. I'm just really, your teachers are probably even more proud that you didn't ask anything obnoxious. But you know what? You could have. And I would not have taken offense to it because one of the things that I live for is not to offend people and, more importantly, not to be easily offended. And why? Because it shows that we've got to be humble and willing to work with each other in our differences, which is why I am so proud to be here at this school. And you honestly have inspired me to do more of the work that I like to do. So I'm going to bring this show to a close, but then I want to just end with one final thing. But I just want to just give you a chance to just show your school spirit with all of the Shoot the Shiitake listeners. Yes. And I will be back with my carryout order on Shoot the Shiitake. We'll be back in just a minute. It's not always easy to communicate with young people, which is why I do what I do, traveling around the country and around the world, not only doing youth groups, but women's discussions and men's conferences, as well as parish and even corporate events. So if you're interested in booking an event with me so that I can just cut through all the bullshitaki and just get to the truth of the matter, you can easily book an event with me by going to fatherleofeeds.com/events. And I will see you at your next event. And hopefully, we will all be fed body, mind, and soul. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for our carry out order. And really, you know, just hearing these young people and just listening to their questions again and listening to my answers, I just have to admit the one thing that I take away from all of this, the one carry out order that I have all of this is, number one, we have to have more opportunities to just simply ask each other these questions. You find strength in numbers. So while young people might want to just talk with me individually, I think that we as a church and we as schools and we as just youth groups, we need to create forums where young people can just engage a discussion. And so while it's easy to talk to people one-on-one, I sometimes think that a group discussion like this gave them all the strength. And what was really encouraging, you didn't see it because obviously this is an audio cast or podcast, not a video. You didn't see just how engaged the young people were in the audience. They were kind of proud of their friends asking the questions, and they were also maybe a little nervous and intimidated. And then you can even see like how some of them asked a question and one of them wanted to follow up, but they kind of didn't want to ask it in front of everybody. So we got to make sure there are dynamics where we can have group discussions like this, but also make sure priests, deacons, religious, that we're also available to do the one-on-ones as well. You know, the other thing that I took away from all of this was that there was a real need for these young people to learn more about what is called the theology of the body, some of the questions, especially when it dealt with priests and celibacy, and they were really respectful in not asking about the scandals. But I know it's on the back of their minds because, number one, I was a high school student and I remember all the hormones and all the questions and all the immaturity that had to do with just sexuality. And so I think we also need to make sure that schools are providing an authentic and age-appropriate lesson on human sexuality, the theology of the body as we kind of know it today. The other carry-out order that I take away from all of this is just how much fun I had talking to young people. But I also know there are a lot of priests and a lot of clergy members who don't enjoy youth ministry. They just do not like it. And here's why. It might not be their gift. Every priest, every religious, every person, in fact, has a charism. And that charism might be to work with youth. I look at, for example, St. John Bosco, because he was a patron for young people. Not everyone wants to do that. And so I just think that if, like, for example, you're a parent and you're struggling with your kids to try to find a good youth group, that's what you need to be looking for, a good youth group. Don't worry too much about whether the priest is relevant or not. I think what we've got to do is realize that maybe the priest doesn't relate to young people. That doesn't make him a bad person. But that does require you to make sure you're connecting them to good youth groups. And why? Because a good youth group leader or a good priest or whoever a youth minister is, they have the gift. Your parish priest might not. However, this idea of being able to ask each other questions, maybe might you consider inviting your priest over for dinner one day? And, you know, especially if you have young people, teenagers, you can encourage them to maybe prepare a question that they could ask Father. That might put him on the spot. You know what? Who cares? Put him on the spot because he's got to be able to come up with an answer that at least is helpful, which is another thing that I took away from my conversation. Another carryout order is I don't always have all the answers because sometimes I didn't fully understand the questions. Thankfully, I understood most of these kids' questions, but the answers, I wonder, were they good? Were they effective? You know, like I was doing it while I was recording this show, so was it very natural? I mean, there are times when I want to use more graphic words to kind of describe something. And is that appropriate? Well, answering a question is not an easy thing to do. And so what we've got to do is not just listen to the question that's being asked, but maybe get deeper and find out what is the genesis of that question, because that's what keeps the conversation stimulating. So when, you know, people are asking me about personal things, what I really want to do is get to the real question that they're asking that they just may be afraid to answer. But I've got to be able to answer it in a way that makes sense and, ready for this, it comes to an end. Because you could just talk forever, and I certainly can do that. But if we are willing to really get deep into the questions that people are asking and then try to make our answer bite-sizable and clear, then that basically tells me that I actually know what I'm talking about. In fact, when I was teaching homiletics in the seminary, I encouraged the men to listen to young people's questions. And if you can explain the deep mysteries of God in a way that a child can understand it, then that priest who's giving the homily or giving that talk really knows what he's talking about. But if you try to explain something and it doesn't make sense to anyone, it's probably because you haven't integrated the information enough to communicate it in an effective way. I mean, the reality is some people talk in homilies and I wonder if they are just simply regurgitating what they memorized from a book they read or a class that they took. I think the reason why Jesus was the most effective communicator was because he took these divine truths and made it so easy that even like uneducated people and children could understand. That's why they flocked to him. And I mean, I would never compare myself to Jesus, even though I'm called to be in persona Christi, but that's generally, you know, when you're in the person of Christ, it's when you're celebrating the sacraments. But guess what I do? If I'm speaking to young people and I'm not celebrating the sacraments, I still have to present Christ to them. It's still my responsibility to make sure that I'm communicating the grace of God's truth to them. And so in a way, this conversation was truly a sacramental, I didn't say it was a sacrament, but it was a sacramental moment. It was an opportunity for us to kind of become one. And what was really beautiful about this school experience is that, I don't know, it just gave me a chance to bring Jesus to them by word. And then in the sacrament of the Eucharist, I make the word become flesh and it dwells among them. And so my final carryout order is the power of words. I'll be very honest with you. I sometimes think that people don't understand this show. Now, I've done, what, about 40 episodes now? And I get some really great responses, but at the same time, I wish we would grow more. So I need you all to kind of share this message with as many people as possible. Share the podcast and just, you know, let people know about it, encourage them to subscribe. And I really need your help to kind of keep this going. To produce something like this takes a little bit of money and certainly a lot of time. And I don't have the resources for it because I'm just doing this out of the kindness of my own heart. When I did radio, yeah, they gave me, you know, a stipend to do the radio show. But with something like this, it's not going to happen. But I couldn't do the radio show just because I was so busy with my schedule that a podcast became the easiest way to communicate like a radio show would. So we need the support, number one. We need you to share this message with other listeners, but also to help them understand the power of words. You see, a lot of times Catholic podcasts are just simply talking about Catholic things, and that kind of limits the grace of God to theology, dogma, you know, spirituality. But really, God wants to be present in normal life, like with you in the grocery store as you're driving in your car. Maybe listening to this podcast as you're driving in your car or as you're going to work or you're at play, you're at a restaurant. God is a part of that. And how? It's how we interact with those people. And that's why the conversations, if it's good, it can lead to conversions. And this show is just simply kind of letting the world know that the church is not closed-minded, that we are willing to listen, that we're willing to engage, and we're also willing to engage in a conversation in a non-judgmental way, which is why hopefully we will continue to get your support and even more listeners so that we can even share this message far and wide with as many people and talk with even more unique situations and conversations in our upcoming show. And we do have some amazing guests coming up in the show. And so if you want, please be in touch with us. Send us your questions. Send us your support. Share this podcast with other people and make sure that we continue to bring about conversions One conversation at a time. So that is my carryout order. I learned a lot from these high school students. Round of applause to them for their bravery to ask the questions, as well as to the teachers and the principal and all the staff and administrators at that school. Thanks for inviting me out there. And between now and the next time, we shoot the shiitake. Stay hungry. And we hope you enjoyed this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake. And if you want to advertise or sponsor our show, just visit us at shoottheshiitake.com. Encourage family and friends to listen to the podcast and to subscribe on their favorite podcast platform. And as always, your support is not only appreciated, it is much needed. So learn more at shoottheshiitake.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.